Thanks, Nick. And can I add my welcome to everyone? And thank you for turning out on this cold, snowy winter's evening. Just a quick word about Stop the War Coalition. It was established in September 2001, shortly after 9/11.
This meeting is being recorded.
When George Bush announced his war on terror. So Stop the War is dedicated to preventing and ending all wars and to opposing the British government's disastrous addiction to war, often for oil. We are committed to Palestinian rights, opposing racism and Islamophobia, and to the defence of civil liberties. Check out the website www.stopwar.org.uk, and there are quite a few recorded meetings there that you can listen to. So our meeting tonight is called The War Lawyers, the US, Israel and Juridical Warfare. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. I had to look up what it meant. It means relating to due judicial proceedings and the administration of law. So we're very fortunate to have two speakers tonight, and we hope we'll have plenty of time for questions. And if you'd like to put your questions into chat, that would make it easier. And let me know if you want me to introduce you to ask the questions yourself. So our first speaker is Alex Snowden. Alex has been involved in the Stop the War Coalition since its foundation in 2001. He's on the committee of Newcastle Stop the War. He's also chair of Newcastle Palestine Solidarity Campaign and an activist in the National Education Union. So Alex is going to open the talk on the geopolitics of the ongoing war on terror and Stop the War movement, setting the context for Dr. Craig Jones' newly published book, The War Lawyers. So thank you, Alex.
Great. Thank you, Pam. And this will be 10 minutes max. Just a little bit of context setting, a little bit of an introduction to help set the scene for what Craig is going to talk about. And Pam mentioned and Nick referred to being involved in Stop the War from 2001 onwards. That's true in my case. And in fact, I remember I was a student across the road at Northumbria at the time, but I remember standing on the campus at Newcastle Uni, just outside the Student Union building, just days after the terrorist attacks of 9/11, standing with a petition which said something like, stop the war before it starts. This was before the invasion of Afghanistan, which began in October of that year. And we were in the process, nationally and locally, the process of launching the Stop the War Coalition. And it was about saying, to begin with, we're trying to stop a war from even beginning. We certainly didn't anticipate that 20 years later we would still be doing it, that the Stop the War Coalition would still exist, that it would still be necessary. But for a number of reasons, it certainly is. And the context I want to give is to do with two things. One thing is the war on terror, so-called war on terror that George Bush, Tony Blair and others launched in 2001 in response to those terrorist attacks. And then also just a little bit about Israel, because I know that and the situation in Palestine, because I know that's a key part of what Craig has been examining. And the war on terror began with the invasion and then the occupation of Afghanistan. And in November of 2001, there was quite a lot of crowing from people who were pro-war about how it was all over. Afghanistan has been liberated. The word liberated became a key word in the language that was used about the series of invasions, occupations, bombings over the following years. And the idea was that Western power, Western military force, had liberated the people of Afghanistan. What actually developed was an utterly devastating situation. Huge numbers of people killed, many wounded, many people made homeless, internally displaced, and devastation to the infrastructure of the country, the social, basic social, economic infrastructure of the country. We then saw the same in Iraq from 2003 onwards, estimated hundreds of thousands of people killed, and the destruction of a great deal of the basic infrastructure, again, of that country. And in both cases, we also saw terrorism growing, instability and chaos growing in those countries, and also having effects on the wider region and effects on the rest of the world. So this war on terror was in many ways a war of terror being implemented on the people of those countries, and also it bred greater terror threats and greater problems with terrorism. We also saw in 2003 2011, the bombing of Libya. Tomorrow, in fact, is, I think tomorrow is the 10th anniversary of the one of the best things that happened in 2011, which was the Egyptian people overthrowing Mubarak after 18 days of revolutionary upheaval. But the US exploited the instability in the Arab world at that time in pursuit of its own interests. And it had a number of ways of trying to reverse the impact of the Arab Spring, one of which was intervening in Libya, supposedly on the side of the popular uprising, supposedly on the side of the people and against Gaddafi, but instead creating massive problems. An estimated 30,000 people died. You ended up with rival sites of power, you know, competing for power, and a lot of civil society collapsed. Now, one of the things about all of this is these wars and occupations were absolutely brutal in their effects. The second thing is that they were not really motivated by humane, compassionate interests. It was economic and political interests for the US and to some extent its allies that really drove these wars. They were about imperialist self-interest for Washington. A famous thing that we used to talk about at the time of the invasion of Iraq and the demonstrations and the protests around that in 2003 was the notion of it being a war for oil. Of course, there were other elements to it as well, but that idea of increasing control over economic resources was always absolutely critical. And the third thing to note is that for the most part, these have gone badly, even on their own terms. So even for the people in the American military and political elite, and for countries like our own, this has not gone well. Vast, vast amounts of money spent on these wars. And actually, the US position in the Middle East and the wider region, across North Africa into parts of Asia like Afghanistan and Pakistan, in many ways has actually been weakened. And I think one thing to note is that because of all of these things, the devastation caused, the fact that really these were wars driven by crude economic interest, and the failure of those wars, it's been necessary for the ideologues of war, the people pushing their arguments and ideas across to justify these wars, it's been necessary for them to dress them up as something that they're not, to dress them up as humanitarian. I first remember that concept of humanitarian intervention really in the late 90s, which was when there was the bombing of Kosovo, and we had this idea, it was Clinton and Blair as a double act at that time rather than Bush and Blair, but this idea that it was humanitarian, this is about liberating the people in a particular country from their own tyrannical rulers. And so in Afghanistan, we had the idea of liberating women in particular from the Taliban, liberating Iraqis from Saddam's tyranny, often an emphasis on the Kurds and liberating the Kurds, liberating the Libyan people from Gaddafi and so on. In reality, it wasn't about that. In reality, it was much more crude. And this humanitarianism was a kind of window dressing for what was really going on. And I think that's one of the things that's worth thinking about today with what Craig's going to be discussing about the use of the law. The law in international law is always an ideological battlefield. It's contested. There are different points of view. It can be interpreted in different ways. It can be manipulated in different ways. For many opponents of war, international law is something that people appeal to try and stop further conflict from happening. But it can also be manipulated by powerful interests to support their own interests. And there's an ideological element to it as well as a practical element, these appeals to the law. And on that note, I think it's worth, as I said, I would also mention Israel. Just briefly, Israel effectively oversees an appalling apartheid regime, a racist regime, a very violent regime. And that affects the people living under military occupation in the West Bank, those who are in what is effectively an open-air prison in siege conditions in Gaza. Also, for the second-class citizens, the Palestinian citizens of Israel itself, within Israel's borders. And it has a huge impact, of course, on the refugees, millions of Palestinian refugees who are living outside of Palestine and Israel altogether. And violence, military force on a massive scale in a terrible way, has been used by Israel repeatedly over a long period of time. Most horrifically, in recent years in Gaza with 2009, 2012, and again in 2014, most terribly in the summer of 2014, when more than 2,000 people, including more than 500 children, were killed in that assault on Gaza. So in that context, against that all of that horror and that injustice and the racism of Israeli apartheid, Israel has needed to avoid being stigmatized by the international community, to avoid sanctions, to legitimize, to justify what it's doing. And I think that that is an important thing to think about and think about the context for looking at the uses of the law and what Craig is going to be discussing, that it is against that background, the violence, the war, the racism, and the everyday oppression of the Palestinian people living under occupation and other Palestinians as well. So just to finish, in terms of what we can do in response to all this, raising awareness and getting our ideas, getting our analysis, getting the facts across is absolutely crucial. And today's event is one very small part of doing that. I'd also urge people to join organisations like Stop the War and Palestine Solidarity Campaign and support the campaigns that those organisations are involved in. Right now, the most important campaign for Stop the War is trying to get Boris Johnson and his government to do the same as Joe Biden to stop doing arms sales with Saudi Arabia in relation to its war in Yemen. We need to step up the pressure on that. For Palestine, we need to build the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement. And I think we do have a particular duty in this country, as we have done since 2001, when Tony Blair made it clear he was committing this country to support George Bush and support the US no matter what. We have a particular duty here because the UK is a close ally of the US, a very close ally of Israel, very close ally of Saudi Arabia and the other Gulf states. And our job, our challenge as a movement, is to break that allegiance, to break that loyal British support and that allegiance for everything that is decided in Washington and to a great extent as well in Tel Aviv. And so I look forward to hearing what Craig has to say. We're going into a lot more detail about some of the issues I've just touched on there, but I hope that that is a useful sort of setting of the context for what we're discussing this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.